You may find this hard to believe, but I know exactly what you're thinking right now. You're thinking, well, I thought everything from Texas was supposed to be big. You're thinking, I wonder if he drives a pickup truck. And I must say, with great shame, that I do not drive a pickup truck. I drive a minivan. And I wish that my wife Melissa and our daughter Morgan, our son David, could have just all piled in the minivan and driven to Florida so that they could be with you, with us this week, and you could meet them and they could meet you. But as you know, school is starting, and so they had to remain back home in Houston. And I thank you for the opportunity and the invitation to come and be with you. We share a lot of things because we're just on the other side of the Gulf. And so you don't have to apologize for heat and humidity this week. I'm used to that. And as those who reside on the Gulf Coast, we understand about hurricanes and preparation and things like that. And so I look forward to being with you and meeting you and getting to be together as God's people as we consider our theme this week, Jesus Calls Us. We're going to be studying about the 12 apostles. And hopefully you recognize the title of our theme from a hymn that is in our songbooks, Jesus Calls Us. And it's on the very back page of your notebook, because I want us to consider not just this song, but an additional verse that is not included in our songbook that will not only help us understand this song, but our theme for this week. I remember singing this hymn as a kid and wondering, what is a tumult and why is Jesus calling us over a tumult? Well, I want you to consider at the bottom of the page this additional verse that will help explain what that first verse means. Here was the author's first verse of the original hymn. As of old, apostles heard him by the Galilean lake, turn from home and toil and kindred, leaving all for his dear sake. Now here's the application to us. Jesus calls us over the tumult of our life's wild, restless sea. Just like Jesus called the apostles by the Sea of Galilee, he calls us over the sea of our life, a sea that is at times tumultuous. It's stormy. It's like a hurricane. And he calls us and says, come and follow me. And just like they left home and toil and kindred, so we, day by day, listen to his sweet voice as it calls us, saying, follow me, love me more, follow me all the way. So I want you to consider this week Jesus calling us, just like he called the 12 apostles. Now we understand that the apostles were called to a unique work, and so I don't mean to suggest this morning that we are called to do exactly the same thing as the 12 apostles did. You know that Jesus called them and said, you have a special mission. You're going to be guided into all truth. You're going to have spiritual gifts. You're going to be commissioned to go into all the world and preach the gospel. And while there are parts of the apostles' work that we do not attain to, still we are called through the gospel to follow Jesus. And I want us to consider the work of the apostle and Jesus calling them from two perspectives this week. Number one, how can we be better disciples individually? When we look at the lives of Peter, Andrew, James, and John, and the rest, how can we be better disciples as we follow Jesus? And then secondly, how can we work together better? You know, the apostles came to be known as the 12. And so how can we, in our common mission and common goal in the local church, learn to work together like they did? they were very different. They were called from different walks of life, but they worked together. Now, through the New Testament, we see the word apostle used not just in pertaining to the original 12. If you look at the very back cover of the notebook where it lists the 12 apostles, four times these men are listed as Jesus called them. But we recognize that there are people in the New Testament called apostle whose names aren't on these lists. Who might some of those be? Who are some people in the New Testament called an apostle that weren't called by Jesus in this way? Who comes to mind? All right, the apostle Paul, we call him. He was one, he admitted, born out of due season, so he was called later to be an apostle. Okay, who else? Somebody said it. All right, Matthias was selected to replace Judas after he died. Good. Who else? Barnabas is called an apostle. Jesus is called an apostle in the book of Hebrews. When we say apostle, what is the usual definition that we mean? Someone who is sent. Sent on a mission, and certainly Jesus was one sent by the Father. But the apostles that we're going to study together are these 12 that Jesus called for a special purpose. Those who would be His ambassadors. He knew that His life on the earth would be short, and His ministry would be short. And so He would need these 12 men then who would carry on the mission and take the gospel into the uttermost parts of the world. So let us consider then, Jesus calls us a study of the 12 apostles. I want to read first from Matthew chapter 10 and invite you to read with me the first four verses of Matthew chapter 10. Beginning at verse 1, "And having summoned His 12 disciples, He gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. Now the names of the 12 apostles are these: the first, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew his brother, and James the son of Zebedee, and John his brother, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew the tax gatherer, James the son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the zealot, and Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed Him. These 12 Jesus sent out." There's our definition of apostle, one sent. He sent them out. And these were the 12 that He called. He had a number of disciples, the first verse said. But out of these many disciples, Jesus handpicked 12. Well, where do we start to study the 12 apostles? Start with the one who Matthew says is, verse 2, the first. Simon, who is called Peter. When you look at the lists of the apostles again, they're not always in the same order. They're listed differently, and sometimes things are said about them that are not said in other places. But there's one thing that is always the same on every list of the apostles. Who is always listed first? Simon Peter. And when Matthew lists them, he uses this word, the first, which in the Greek is protos. It's like a prototype. And that doesn't mean that Peter was the official leader of the apostles. That's never stated in the Scriptures. But could we not say that he is at least the unofficial spokesman of the group? Think about how many times when Jesus addressed the apostles that it was Peter who spoke up first, the first. In fact, one author said that Peter's motto in life seemed to be, when in doubt, speak. You ever know anybody like that? Not sure what to say or if I should even be saying anything, but that's not going to stop me. I'm going to speak. That was Peter. And so we're going to begin with the first and talk about Simon Peter. What is involved in the call to follow Jesus when He calls us and says, "Follow me, be my disciple"? I want to suggest to you first that it involves a call to change. The call to follow Jesus is a call to change. An understanding that you will never be the same. Even when you decide not to follow Jesus, you'll never be the same. You can't be exposed to the gospel and be the same as you were before. It involves a call to change. This is even illustrated in Simon Peter with his name. Look to John chapter 1 and notice what happened the first time Jesus and Peter met. Andrew and John had been talking with Jesus and discovered this is the Messiah. And so in John chapter 1, Andrew, verse 40, Simon Peter's brother went and first found his own brother Simon and said to him, "We have found the Messiah," which translated means Christ. Now look at verse 42 of John 1. He brought him to Jesus. Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon, the son of John." That's who you are. "You shall be called Cephas," which is translated Peter. See what Jesus did there? Just with his name. This is who you are, Simon. "You shall be Cephas," Peter. Word that means rock or stone. Jesus takes us for who we are. But then He makes us into what we shall be. You are weak. You shall be strong. You are fearful. I will make you faithful. You are useless, unworthy. You shall be useful and worthy in my service. The call to follow Jesus is a call to change. Even when He found them fishing, what did He say to them? "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." He took them for who they were, but then He made them into what they should be. If you're going to follow Jesus, you need to understand that you can never be the same. It's a call to change. I want us to consider three instances in Peter's life where he had to change. If he was going to follow after his master, it was going to involve the call to change. The first one is found in Matthew chapter 14. Because I want you to know, if you want to follow Jesus, you're going to have to change your look. You have to change your look. Now, I don't mean by that your appearance. I mean you're going to have to change the things you look at and deem to be important. In Matthew chapter 14 and verse 22, after Jesus had fed the 5,000 men with 5 loaves and 2 fish, immediately He made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of Him to the other side while He sent the multitudes away. And after He had sent the multitudes away, He went up to the mountain by Himself to pray, and it was evening, it was there alone. But the boat was already many stadia away from the land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, He came to them walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw Him walking on the sea, they were frightened, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take courage, it is I, do not be afraid." And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And he said, "Come." And Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came toward Jesus. I don't know about you, but if I'm in the boat, which is in the middle of the sea, and it's battered by the wind and the waves, and I recognize that this is Jesus who is coming and walking on the water, the same Jesus who has just fed 5,000 men plus women and children with a little amount of food. If that is me, the first thing I'm asking Jesus to do is to make the boat stop rocking. "Lord, if it is you, command this boat to be still." But not Peter. Who is it who speaks up first? "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." You ever thought about how you get out of a boat to walk on water? I mean, we know how to get out of a boat to walk on the pier or to walk on land. I just have to wonder, how did Peter get out of the boat? Did he stick one foot over and kind of test the water like you do to make sure the bath isn't too hot or too cold? Or did he jump out with both feet and stick the landing? Doesn't say. But Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came toward Jesus. But, verse 30, seeing the wind, he became afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, "Lord, save me." But seeing the wind. What happened? He changed his look. We're used to, at this time of year, seeing signs on I-45 in Houston, the digital billboards, something like, "Hurricane forming in the Gulf. Be prepared." And we get things in the mail at the house about Hurricane Preparedness Month, things you need to do to make certain your household is ready for the storm season. We got one a while back that had three steps. I'm a three-point preacher, so I like three steps to get ready for hurricane season. The first one said, buy enough food and water for your family, 2 weeks' worth. Number two, take those supplies and put them in the trunk of your car. Number three, drive your car to Nebraska. You do those three things, and you'll be ready for any hurricane that comes. But what is it that we're afraid of with the hurricane? Afraid of being unprepared. And so we'll go and we'll buy up every battery in the store and every bottle of water. And we'll make certain, and even the weatherman says this is a cone of uncertainty. We don't know where it's going to go. What Peter needed to do was change his look. There were things in this storm he couldn't control. He couldn't control the wind. He couldn't control the waves. But Jesus could. And he took his eyes off of Jesus. He was walking on the water coming toward Jesus. But seeing the wind, he cried out for fear. If you want to be a follower of Jesus, you're going to have to change your look. Quit looking at things you can't control. Quit focusing your attention on things in this life that you're powerless to do anything about. And start looking to Him who could stand in the middle of a storm, in the middle of a sea, and say, "Peace, be still." And it would. A storm churns in the distance, its path becoming clear, a cone of uncertainty established, and I feel the rising fear. As sunshine spills around me, I'm crippled by the dread. No joyful dance in moonlight. I walk around as dead. But there is one who calls me to live for just today, to greet each dawn with praises and bask in sunlight rays. For though the storm is coming, His promises are clear. With Him I'll walk on water. With Him I'll have no fear. What would Jesus say to you in the middle of your storm, in the middle of your life? Would He have to say to you, "Why are you so timid? How is it that you have no faith?" It's time to change your look. Remember, it's a tumultuous sea, and Jesus is calling us over our life's wild, restless sea, saying, "Follow me. I can do what you cannot. I can control what is out of your hands. Come, follow me." To do that, you're going to have to change your look. Secondly, you're going to have to change your mind. It's not just the things that you look at. It's the things you think about. Let's look at Matthew chapter 16 and notice what happened when Jesus asked the apostles a question in verse 13. "Now when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, He began asking His disciples, saying, 'Who do people say that the Son of Man is?' And they said, 'Some say John the Baptist, and others Elijah, but still others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets.' And He said to them, 'But who do you say that I am?'" Guess who answered first? "And Simon Peter answered and said, 'Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God.'" Now when Jesus asked the first question, it wasn't because He didn't know the answer. It wasn't that He was saying, "Now, what are people saying behind my back? What's the report out on the street? Who do people say that I am?" And they listed some pretty good answers. Jeremiah, John the Baptist, Elijah. That's pretty good company, isn't it? If somebody asked you, "Who's holding your meeting?" You said, "Old Elijah's coming to preach." I would take that as a compliment. I do wear a leather belt, you know. But with Jesus, you see, that fell well short. One of the prophets. And so He asked the second question. That first one was really a setup to the second one. "But who do you say that I am? My own 12. You've spent the most time with me. You've heard the things that I've said and seen the things that I've done. Have you come to a different conclusion than everyone else?" Peter said, "Without a doubt, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. No one can do the things that you're doing unless He be God." But then, Jesus said, verse 21, "From that time He began to show His disciples that He must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed." And look who spoke up first. Peter took Him aside and began to rebuke Him, saying, "God forbid it, Lord. This shall never happen to you." Now put the blanks like I did to show you how incredible Peter's statement was. "God forbid it, Lord. That's like saying, God forbid it, God. You don't know what you're talking about. There's no way this could happen. If you are the Christ, the Son of the living God, there's no way that man would be able to overpower you. This can never happen. And notice what Jesus said to him in verse 23. He turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You are setting your mind on God's, not on God's interests, but on man's." Peter, you're going to have to start thinking like God. You're going to have to change your mind. Is it not so that there will be things that happen in our life that we don't understand? And we want to know, well, why? Why me? Why is this happening? Why doesn't God do something? You're going to have to change your mind. You're going to have to start thinking like God and stop thinking like man. How many times have we seen the difference between the candidate and then the one who is elected? The candidate makes all kinds of promises and says, when I get into office, I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing, or when I'm elected, these are the changes that I'm going to make. We're not going to do it like we've always done it. And then he gets elected, and then he gets information that only people in his position are privy to, and he realizes, well, now I see why we've done it that way. Now I understand why these decisions were made. And the difference is, he's got all the information now. You see, we are quick to call for change and ask God to do something from our limited perspective. And all we can see is what's around us. We have to start thinking not from the ground up, but from the throne down. That if he is God, then he knows more about this than I do. And so I'm going to choose to submit. I'm going to change my mind and start thinking about His will and not just mine. When the parent says to the child, "You're not going to that party. You're not leaving the house wearing that." And we don't understand. We just think, oh, they're just trying to keep us from having fun. They don't even know what it's like to be a teenager. That's when you choose to submit. They must know more about this than I do. They've lived longer, and so I'm going to choose to trust. I'm going to change my mind to theirs. Sometimes the elders will make a decision, and the sheep will wonder, well, why are we doing that way? Why are they doing that? What about this person? Well, we must understand that sometimes there are things, information that elders are privy to that they can't share. And if these are men who are qualified according to the Scriptures, and we've held them up in high esteem, we're going to have to choose to trust and follow. Respect their judgment, that they know more about this than we do, and so we're going to change our mind and follow them. If we truly believe that God is, let us then choose to trust Him in things we don't understand. Change our mind to answer the call to follow Jesus. And then number three, you have to change your look, you have to change your mind And third, you have to change your will. Change your will. In Matthew chapter 26, again, Jesus with the disciples, and now we're on the very last night of before his arrest. And he drops this bombshell in verse 31. He said to them, "You will all fall away because of me this night. For it is written, I will strike down the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered. But after I have been raised, I will go before you to Galilee." Guess who spoke up first? "But Peter answered and said to him, even though all may fall away because of you, I will never fall away. And Jesus said to him, truly I say to you that this very night before a cock crows, you shall deny me three times. Peter said to him, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. All the disciples said the same thing too." Now they all said the same thing. But again, notice it was Peter who said it first. Now Jesus had predicted that one would betray him. But this was the first time he said this is going to happen from our own little group. One of you, my chosen 12, is going to betray me. Peter said, "I will never fall away. I will not deny you." Who was it who pulled out the sword in the garden and cut off the ear of Malchus? It was Peter. But unfortunately, that was not all that Peter said that very night. Because in Matthew chapter 26, fast forward to verse 69, Peter was sitting outside in the courtyard, and a certain slave girl came to him and said, "You too were with Jesus the Galilean." But he denied it before them all, saying, "I do not know what you are talking about." And when he had gone out to the gateway, another servant girl saw him and said to those who were there, "This man was with Jesus of Nazareth." And again he denied it with an oath, "I do not know the man." And a little later the bystanders came up and said to Peter, "Surely you too are one of them, for the way you talk gives you away." And he began to curse and swear, "I do not know the man." And immediately a cock crowed. And Peter remembered the word which Jesus had said, "Before a cock crows, you will deny me three times." And he went out and wept bitterly. There's a difference between saying the right words. That's easy for us to do here today. There's a difference between saying the right words and then doing them, being committed to what you've said. When Peter was surrounded by his fellow apostles, he said, "I'll never do that. I would never deny you." And then the same night, when his surroundings changed, and now it's going to cost him, he said, "I don't even know the man." I used to think on the third denial, when it said that Peter began to curse and swear, I thought that meant he was saying all kinds of profanity. I thought, well, if you can cuss like a sailor, maybe you can cuss like a fisherman too. I didn't know. But that's not the point. To curse and swear in the first century was opposite of a blessing. It was as if Peter was saying, "May God condemn me if I'm lying. May God kill me on the spot if I'm not telling the truth. I do not know the man." And immediately, the cock crowed and Peter remembered. In Luke's account of the very same event, it said that Jesus turned and looked at Peter. You're going to have to change your will. My kids are now 15 and 12 when they were much younger, 3 and 1. My duty at night was bath duty, and so I decided, well, I'm just going to make this a lot easier, and I'm going to give them a bath at the same time. And the first thing my daughter Morgan did, who was older, she took a bowl of water and dumped it on her brother's head. And, of course, he went into hysterics, and I finally got him calmed down. I said, Morgan, why did you do that? And she said, because I wanted to. Well, you're not going to do anything until you want to. Until you change your will. For it's not just about saying it because it's the Lord's Day or singing it because we're all here doing it together. But I've changed my will. It's not just that I want to be a worker for the Lord. I will work and I will pray and labor every day in the kingdom of the Lord. Doesn't matter what my surroundings are, who's listening, what it will cost me, I will change my will. In John chapter 21, after the resurrection, and Jesus appeared to the disciples, in verse 15 of John 21, when they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? A lot of questions about what are the these that Jesus is talking about. They had just ate fish. Is he saying, do you love me more than fish? Do you love fishing more than fishing for men? Well, remember, it was Peter who said, even though all these may fall away, his fellow apostles, I will never deny you. And so could it be that Jesus is just asking, Peter, do you really mean that? Do you love me more than these? You just saying the words. He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my lambs. He said to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, shepherd my sheep. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he had said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, tend my sheep. Three times he asked Peter the same question, do you love me? Three times Peter denied, I do not know him. Jesus wants to know, Peter, do you love me or not? May I ask you this morning, how many times is Jesus going to have to ask you? How many? You just play in church? You just going through the motions? When it's convenient? How many times do you have to ask you, do you love me or not? It's time to change your will. Say, I don't care what other people are doing. I'm not waiting for anyone else anymore. I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back. Change your will. Follow through with what you've committed, or you're not following Jesus. Peter did change. We still read from his writings, 1 and 2 Peter, where he encourages us to resist the devil and flee from him. And he tells us to add to our faith virtue, knowledge, self-control, perseverance, godliness, brotherly kindness, Christian love. But especially his last words, where he wrote, grow in the grace and the knowledge of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. In other words, change. If you're going to answer the call to follow Jesus, you're going to have to answer the call to change. History tells us that Peter was crucified after watching his wife be crucified and encouraging her to remember the Lord, he said. He was then nailed to the cross. And according to tradition, he requested to be crucified head down, unworthy to die in the same manner as his Lord. But what a powerful testimony the Apostle Peter is of one who followed Jesus to the end and encourages his brothers and sisters today to continue to grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Thank you for listening this morning.